This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning into Eco Radio. On tonight's program, the first guest will be Lori Lawrence, talking about the KC participation in the National March in D.C. John Kerman and Manny Abarca will be on to talk about the local march. Also, Kansas environmentalist Joe Spees spoke at a town hall forum held in Kansas, Representative Kevin Yoder's district, on April 19th. We'll hear what he had to say. But first, I'm Natural E with your headline news. GRIS.org reports, we just hit 410 parts per million of CO2. Welcome to a whole new world. This is not normal, and we are on track to witness a climate unseen in 50 million years by mid-century. In pre-industrial times, the concentration of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere stood at 280 parts per million, and that number has been rising ever since, warming the planet by 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit along the way. CO2 levels fluctuate with the seasons, climbing a bit higher each spring. We first hit 400 parts per million back in 2013, and that became the new norm just 4 years later. And on April 18th this year, as predicted, we crossed the 410 parts per million threshold for the first time at the Mauna Loa Observatory in Hawaii. The University of Cambridge.uk reports, scientists have found that a caterpillar commercially bred for fishing bait has the ability to biodegrade polyethylene, one of the toughest and most used plastics frequently found clogging up landfill sites in the form of plastic shopping bags. The waxworm, the larva of the common of a common insect, or also known as the greater wax moth, is found in beehives across Europe. In the wild, the worms lay They live as parasites in bee colonies. Wax moths lay their eggs inside hives where the worms hatch and grow on beeswax, hence the name. A chance discovery occurred when one of the scientific team, Bertocchini, an amateur beekeeper, was removing the parasitic pests from the honeycombs in her hives. The worms were temporarily kept in a typical plastic shopping bag that became riddled with holes. As the molecular details of the process become known, the researchers say it could be used to devise a biotechnological solution on an industrial scale for managing polyethylene waste. The scientists that made this study plan to find a way to make this discovery a viable way to rid plastic pollution from our oceans, rivers, and all of the environment. And finally, GRIS.org reports, Britain just went a whole day without burning any coal for electricity. It hit the milestone on Friday, going a full 24 hours without relying on the world's dirtiest fossil fuel. That's a first since the Industrial Revolution, and an indication of big changes in the country that brought us the original steam engine. Britain is on track to completely stop generating electricity from coal by 2025, with two-thirds of the country's coal-generating capacity gone within the last 5 years. The nation is rapidly switching to renewables like solar and wind power, as well as to natural gas. Last year, coal produced just 9% of Britain's electricity, down from 40% in 2012. And now I'd like to turn the show over to Mr. Craig Lubow.
Okay, thank you, Natural E. We have on the first guest I have on to talk about the Climate March coming up on the 29th is Lori Lawrence. And Lori is a climate activist. She's actually also a victim of one of the fracking earthquakes in Wichita. She serves with the Sierra Club on their executive committee, and she was one of the organizers of Bag Free Wichita. And so welcome, Lori.
Hi, Craig. Thank you.
And so let me have you, you're involved in the national part of it. As far as organizing, you're doing a busload of people from Kansas, I think mostly Sierra Club people, going to the march on the 29th in Washington, D.C. So tell us a little bit about that. What motivated you to do this? And what do you think we will gain in terms of what we hope to happen in Washington, D.C.? Is a hope that you're going to influence the legislators there, or do you think something else might come of it?
Well, let me start off by telling you that it is mostly not Sierra Club members on the bus. We cooperated with the Oklahoma Sierra Club and the Missouri Sierra Club. So there are people coming from all three states to go to D.C. We're leaving early, early Friday morning from Wichita and then going up through Lawrence, Topeka, Kansas City, and then over to Columbia and St. Louis, picking up people along the way. We've got a bus that holds 50 seats, and they're all full. We sold out very early. The point of the march, I think, is similar to last Saturday's Science March, to get as many people out there on the front lines as possible facing the legislators and the new president to let him know that we believe that climate change is real and that we want something to be done to try to mediate that. It's going to be difficult because we know that this president doesn't agree that climate change is real. But only by people speaking out and standing up and marching can we get the numbers to show that this is the majority of the population of Oklahoma who has horrible, horrible experience with fracking, as we do here, and as the people in Missouri are feeling some of the effects of what's going on in their state as well. We all are working cooperatively along with hundreds of thousands of others who are expected to be there. I'm looking forward to going and marching along with people that are one of us. A lot of what happens is not at the march, but it's on the way there. It's building those connections. Many of the people in Kansas and Oklahoma feel like they are alone, that no one is there on their side because of the makeup of our two states and being so red. It makes it hard for us to think that we're not just by ourselves. I'm in Wichita, so I'm lucky, but we've got people coming from Molina, Kansas, and I've got people coming from Salina. We're coming from all over the state, and they are a lot more isolated there. So building those relationships and continuing those relationships is a big positive fact in our trip from Kansas.
So this will kind of be a motivational experience for them as well to follow through maybe then when they get back.
That's true. And right now people aren't sure what they can do personally or what they can do as a movement. But the size of the movements we're seeing now shows that we can work together and we can make things happen. I don't know how much impact we will have on the president just because he's so stubbornly anti-climate change and anti-science. Yeah. But we can have an impact locally, and we can have an impact on one another and the choices we make, and that is vital.
And do you expect or anticipate that the turnout will be as good as what they had this past Saturday for the March for Science?
I would imagine it will. We've got, I think they told me, about 200 buses coming from all over. We are the farthest out, coming from Kansas and Missouri and Oklahoma. I have not seen anybody coming out from farther west than we are. I can't believe people from California aren't going, but I wouldn't be surprised that we don't overtake those numbers.
All right. And in terms of the specific issues that I know you want to raise global warming as climate change, but are there some specifics about that you hope to focus on when you're in Washington?
Well, we're not going to be there very long, and we're going to be on the march the whole time. But when you will see in media, and maybe not a lot of media, as happened when I was there in 2014 with 400,000 others, we will see some of their... I've got signs from Wichita, and I've asked each person to bring a sign from their state. And a lot of it is just coalition building instead of trying to make something happen on that very day, because I don't think that's really the goal. The goal is to show that we've got the numbers and we are greater than whatever is happening in the Capitol. We are able to do things whether we get that support or not. And at this point, it doesn't look like we will. So that's part of what we're trying to do, is build that support and build those coalitions so we can all work on a local level and nationally, if possible. I know that our representatives in the state of Kansas, we cannot sway. They are immovable. Even our new Ron Estes that we just ended up getting here in the southern part of the state. Guess he has already said in his talks that climate change is bogus. So I don't think we're going to be able to influence our two state senators either. But we have to do things on a more local level, and that is part of the fight that we're putting in right now, trying to make sure that our cities and our counties and our individual states understand the dire circumstances we're in right now and try to move forward with ways to make changes that need to be made.
Okay, and are there any big name speakers that you're aware of that will be speaking at the march in Washington?
You know, I haven't had a chance to look at anything with all this bus organizing. You can get on peoplesclimate.org. I believe they probably have a list of speakers there. I do not know for sure who is going to be there, no.
Okay. And if somebody who has not signed up yet is interested in joining the bus load going to Washington, do you still have some openings on the bus?
We do not. We have completely filled this bus. We tried to do a second bus, but we didn't have the Kansas Sierra Club helping to sponsor it, so the seats were too expensive, and we couldn't do it.
Right.
And so that one has folded now. We have only our bus.
And can you just, before we end this portion, if you'll give that website one more time that people can go to for more information?
It should be peoplesclimate.org.
Okay. All right. So is there anything else that you want to add that we haven't covered?
No, just everybody get out to the march in Kansas City since our bus is full.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to thank you for joining us, Laurie. And now we'll move to our next two guests that are here in the studio is John Kerman. John has been an environmental activist for more than 40 years.
I'm getting old, Craig. Let's not exaggerate, though.
and then we have Manny Abarca, and he is an environmental activist here in Kansas City. He started out, he was asked at one time, what's more important than the earth? And when he thought about that, that's what sparked his passion for the environment, and he realized the planet needed to be our first priority. And so he's been involved. He did some recycling projects at the University of Central Missouri, and has been involved with 350.org, and I think I heard you say Bridging the Gap before.
Yep.
So John and Manny are going to talk about the local aspects of the March climate. And there's going to be a march here this Saturday.
Technically, we won't be marching here. For logistical and financial reasons, it won't be an actual march in Kansas City, which I think is a thing to stress about the difference between the D.C. and the local events. The focus in D.C. is not so much on speakers. You asked about the speakers there would be in D.C. The focus there is on the march and on encircling the White House with hopefully hundreds of thousands of people. We actually, our movement has encircled the White House before, back in 2011, fighting the Keystone XL pipeline, and maybe 10 to 15,000 people that time, which sent a real message. Encircling the White House sends a message. But if we turn out hundreds of thousands of people to encircle the White House, that's going to send a much more powerful message. So that's really, really important. Here, though, our prospects for turning out hundreds of thousands of people are slim, shall we say. So having a big march in the streets where you get the police to close down intersections and things like that is really requires turning out huge numbers of people. So I'm on the planning team for the local rally, and we decided that we would not march. We would have a rally with some really excellent speakers we can talk about during the segment here at Washington Square Park, which seems to have become the venue of choice for these kinds of things lately.
Was that just a coincidence that you picked the same place as March for the Science, or was there some planning for that?
I don't know that it was coincidence. The decision was actually made before I first showed up to the planning team, but I think it was inspired by the Women's March. This is, in some sense, even though the planning for this began before there was seen to be a need for a Women's March, before the actual election occurred, planning for this event started. Planning for the D.C. event started. But it's, in some sense, has then modeled itself on the success of the Women's March, with a huge central march in D.C., but dozens, I'm not sure what the count is right now, but dozens of sister events, sister marches, sister rallies across the country, St. Louis, Chicago, San Diego, many other places. For people who are within 10 hours of D.C., they want as many as possible to get to the D.C. march. But obviously we're a little farther than that here, so not everyone.
I was going to say, sorry to interrupt you, John.
No, go right ahead, Manny.
Lori kind of had set on a good tone about making sure not only in D.C. are we showing our legislators and the administration there that climate change is real and it matters, but also at a local level, having these level of marches and rallies is very important, so that here at the local level we can set the similar tone and make sure people know that, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 people who are going to show up on a Saturday when they could be doing a myriad of other things, they care. And those people, obviously, if they make that choice to come and participate, they're probably going to vote as well. And so having these local rallies and these local marches really sets a fear within some of our legislators to show that, you know, 2 weeks in a row, people are coming out for climate change, for the environment, for our earth. People are going to start listening when it comes time to make those decisions as they choose which legislation to pursue.
Yeah. And you mentioned the speakers. What are the speakers who are you going to have?
Yeah, we have an excellent lineup of speakers. Probably a pretty fair number of our listeners have heard of Bob Birkebeil, who is with BNIM architect firm here in Kansas City, but he's world-renowned for his leadership in the green building movement. He'll be our kickoff speaker at the rally. We have some excellent other local people here. Margaret May, who's the executive director of the Ivanhoe Neighborhood Council. She will be talking about the justice aspects of this, because what we realize as a climate movement is that it's not just about climate change policy, that the same forces that are wrecking the planet through climate change are also responsible for economic inequality. They're also responsible for the globalization that has hollowed out the manufacturing sector in the United States and left so many people without good economic prospects. It's also tied up with the oppression of people of color, with the environmental justice, where these polluting facilities are sited in areas where poor people live, but mostly in areas where poor people of color live, and they don't have the same resources that the wealthy neighborhoods have to push back and say, you're not putting this in our backyard. And it's also tied up with the forces that have limited equality for LGBTQ people as well. So these things are all tied together. So Margaret May will be speaking about environmental justice. She's done great work with the Ivanhoe Neighborhood Council. We wanted to focus on a range of different areas. So we have Sergio Moreno, who is an interfaith chaplain, and he is with the Rime Buddhist Center. He'll be speaking about the faith aspects of dealing with the climate crisis. We also have John Reyna of the Lakota Dakota Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, who was involved in local efforts to fight back against the Dakota Access Pipeline. He grew up at Standing Rock, and he'll be speaking about how indigenous communities are some of those people of color who are on the front lines of these fights. Stuart Schaefer, who is a professor at Johnson County Community College, will be talking about the impacts that will come from climate change if we don't act soon and in time. Dr. Carissa Stanton, she's a pediatrician. She'll be talking about the health impacts of climate change. We have Terrence Wise. Again, this ties up with economic inequality and low-wage, the kinds of low-wage jobs that that people are forced to take because there aren't other good prospects. Terrence Wise is with it's Stand Up KC, I believe, with the Fight for $15. Yes. And he works at McDonald's, and he is trying to support a family on a McDonald's wage that is just not a living wage for people to survive on. And then our closing speaker is Davis Hammett, who's he's the president of Loud Light, which is based in Kansas, and he's been an activist for many years. He spoke at the Women's March, I do believe, although I wasn't able to be there myself, or perhaps it was a rally. Now I'm a little confused about that since I wasn't there myself. But he's a fiery speaker. He's going to be closing things out with us. And then right here sitting at the table with us is our able MC, Master of Ceremonies, who will be drawing, introducing all these folks and bringing everything together for us.
Right. I think, John, just to make a point, Davis is really going to give us the motivation we need to make sure that the energy we expend on Saturday to participate not only lasts that day, but also to move forward. Because I found it funny in Davis's background, it says he's an activist since he was 10 when he took on Burger King for animal rights violations. And then at age 14, he was a certified green building inspector at 14. I mean, this is some lifelong achievements for some people, and Davis has done this, you know, within his early teen years. So we've got a very impressive list of speakers and performances. I think we have the Haskell Indian Nations University dancers coming out to participate as well. And so it's
let me have you talk about the performances after the break.
Sure.
Then. So we are going to have a couple messages, and then we will be back, and we'll talk about the climate march.
David Corton.
To save Earth and ourselves from ourselves, we must mobilize every resource at our command, including intellectual resources, to transition from an imperial civilization of Earth invaders to an ecological civilization of Earth protectors.
Alternative Radio, Wednesday morning at 9.
After he spent an entire career locking up criminals, John Adams switched roles and went undercover in a federal prison for the Atlanta-based show 60 Days. On this week's All Souls Forum, Adam draws from his experiences, giving us his unique insight about what causes criminal behavior and how the criminal justice system might reduce crime by focusing more on solving endemic social problems and less on force and punishment. Please join us this Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. here at 90.1 FM KKFI.
Tips for preventing contaminated stormwater runoff on this current cast. Rainwater is naturally filtered as it soaks into the ground, but in cities, rain lands on impermeable streets and rooftops.
And as the stormwater flows over these areas, it picks up things like trash and chemicals, sand and grit, bacteria, other pollutants, and then it flows into our local rivers, streams, lakes, and oceans, often without treatment to remove these sorts of pollutants.
That's Rachel Herbert of the EPA's Office of Wastewater Management. She says no matter how far you live from the water, avoid littering. Check your car for leaks, pick up pet waste, and properly dispose of paint, chemicals, and used motor oil. This will help protect both local and distant water resources. Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
Good. We're back with John Kerman and Manny Barca, and we talked about the climate march that's coming up, and as John correctly pointed out, it's actually a climate rally here in Kansas City. For the climate on this coming Saturday, April 29th. I keep wanting to say March 29th because of it being called March.
Right.
But it is April 29th. Manny, you started talking about, we talked about the speakers, and you talk about some of the entertainment.
Right. So we have a couple performances that are happening. One that kind of is right in the middle of our presentation from the Haskell Indian Nations. We have dancers coming out to do tribal dances. We also have Mary Sulawans, who's going to do a spoken word piece that she's prepared just for this event. So we're going to try and mix up not only the academic level and include some of these motivational speeches, but try and have that level of entertainment as well focused on the environment.
Okay. And John, I want to go back a little bit and talk about the environmental justice aspect that you raised. And a couple questions I have in that regard. The first thing is, what is this group doing to try to reach out to and get people of color and from those communities to attend the rally?
Mm-hmm. So we've been reaching out. We have a team who's been working to reach out to partner groups that we could get involved with this. So there's been an active effort to reach out to many different groups. I'll be honest, I wish we had more diversity on our planning team than we do, but we've been working to bring more people in. That's something that that has been lacking here in the environmental movement in Kansas City for years. If you go to an environmental thing, unfortunately, it's mostly a lot of white people that you'll see there, which I like white people. White people are great. I'm a white person myself, but it sure would be nice because we need the different perspectives. And because this is all interconnected, all the same economic system that's wrecking the climate by being unwilling to face up to the effects of our pollution is wrecking people's health, is destroying their neighborhoods, giving their kids asthma, and on and on and on. So we've reached out to a lot of groups. I believe it's Johnson County NAACP is one of the partners for the organization. And we've certainly done our best to incorporate that into the messages that will be coming from this stage there at Washington Square Park. We hope it's going to be at Washington Square Park. I don't know how many of you have looked at the forecast, but the forecast, as someone pointed out before the show, we're still 6 days out, and this is Missouri, so it could change. But right now it's looking like thunderstorms and maybe severe thunderstorms, so we're investigating the possibility of an alternative indoor venue just in case. If you're on Facebook, make sure you like Climate March Kansas City. Follow Climate March Kansas City, our event page. If you search for that, you should be able to find it, and you'll be able to keep up to date if we have to move the location, because we're willing to bear a lot of things, but we're not going to be ask people to come out in lightning to rally for the climate.
Well, maybe, and if you're not on Facebook, we'll be lucky with that, because 2 days before the March for the Science, they were predicting the same thing.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
There was that sudden change in the old state to the south. So.
Yeah, and if you don't do Facebook, we'll try to get our other event page, if you guys will post it up on the that'll be on Eco. Send an email to 350KCLEAD, LEAD, at Gmail, and I'll get you on a list so that if we have to move it, you'll get the updates on that.
So let me have you give that one more time.
Yeah, it's 350KCLEAD, LEAD, at Gmail. I wanted to touch real quick on, expand on what Manny was saying earlier, is that our mantra for this, and the mantra nationally, is that this is a movement. This must be a movement, not a moment. And that's why, listeners, we need you to turn out, because the power of an event like this is in the number of people who show up that day, sending the clear, distinct message on that one day to the people who are opposing climate justice and climate action now, but also sending a message to all of us who care about this issue that there are a lot of us who want to take action on this, which builds our energy to do, frankly, the less fun work, the calling your member of Congress kind of work that is not much fun in my experience anyway, the setting up of meetings and going down and meeting with staff members and the writing of actual letters and that sort of thing. And, you know, we really have to energize people to vote with climate high in their list of priorities. We'll have a chance to transform Congress coming up in less than 2 years, November of 2018, and, you know, we're stuck with We're likely stuck with a president who opposes climate action for 4 years. Whatever happens with all these investigations into President Trump, I still chafe every time I have to say that. But we can start changing Congress, which all the big policies we need have to come out of Congress. So we really got to get energized for that kind of political, on-the-ground, contact your legislators. We have to either scare the legislators enough that they change their policies out of fear that they will lose office, or we have to take them out of office and replace them with climate champions.
So how do you go about getting people to put that at the top of their radar, to think about the environment when they go and they vote? Because I know a lot of people who are environmentalists. I have a lot of friends who are environmentalists. And yet, for some bizarre reasons, they still keep voting for the opposite party based on other issues. So they're apparently thinking of other issues as being more important, when I think I agree with you that environment should be at the top of their importance. So how do you get people to think that way?
Yeah, let me take that one. So I remember, as you kind of referenced my background, I was off to a meeting when I had walked by a friend who was advocating for environmental justice, I believe, and she literally said, "What's more important than the environment?" And it kind of struck me, and that moment kind of sparked everything that I've done so far. And so we need this Saturday to be that moment for many people. We need it to spark the idea that, you know, you can believe in wanting beautiful flowers and having clean air and clean water, but you need to actually do something to protect that as well. I mean, you need to make the choice to show up on Saturday and be inspired, and then make the choice to follow up, as John said, with your legislators and making sure that you're calling the administration. It's about choices and responsibility. I mean, for all those who have kids or grandkids, what do you want to leave your children or your grandchildren? You know, as you go to the voting box, those things should kind of ring whole in your mind, not just jobs and economic policy. And it needs to make sure that as a person, you're believing that, well, the environment has to be there for us to participate in. I mean, there's no important issue than the earth that we should be focused on, because without the earth, we have no other issues to be focused on. So that's what really changed my mind and made me focus sustainability, environmental sustainability, to be more specific, in every action that I do and every issue that I take on. What's the sustainability principle there?
Yeah, we talked about, you went through the list of the speakers. Will any of them be focusing on the connection between the environment and human rights?
Well, that's a good question. I actually, only our lead organizers have seen the actual remarks that the speakers have sent in.
I have read
right.
them all.
They
yeah.
were, they, as MC, they've
right.
been shared with Manny. That's right.
So
you can speak better.
Yeah, I think definitely from a lot of different angles you'll see this. You'll see this from the faith side. You'll see this definitely from the indigenous rights side, the environmental justice side, because a lot of these issues do fall within that human rights category. And whether a person believes they're being oppressed or not by some environmental injustice, it's happening. And others can realize that who are outside of that perspective. And so you're going to get that human rights element within nearly all of the speeches that you have, as well as some possible solutions.
Well, and I've seen arguments that the environmental issues ultimately are likely to lead to, if we don't tackle climate change as well as other environmental issues, that's going to lead to international conflicts and conflicts, especially within the African areas, between these third world countries, that are going to be far worse than any of the conflicts that have been based upon oil.
Right. I mean, what human right is more fundamental than the right to a livable planet? It's the most basic thing. Now, of course, it is hard to get people to make that their top priority, because it's bigger, it's more amorphous, and the crisis, the emergency that we're in, is playing out over decades and ultimately centuries. The impacts of the pollution we put into the atmosphere will be felt potentially millions of years in the future if we keep going on the track we're going now, which is to create a real catastrophe, a global catastrophe. So that's really the biggest challenge we face is how do you persuade people that we need to take emergency action on something that for most Americans at least doesn't yet feel like an emergency. Now, if you live in Palau, you live in the Marshall Islands, you live in the Maldives, yeah, and you're watching the seas literally rising and swallowing up your islands, it feels like an emergency now. Even in parts of the United States, like Miami Beach, New Orleans, where they're seeing the effects of sea level rise already. Now, the difference there is that those places are wealthy enough, they are, at least for now, are imagining they can adapt, that they can build infrastructure, raise streets, and that sort of thing, put in pumps. We just watched the Before the Flood documentary at a screening at Unity Temple yesterday, and it talks some about that. So wealthier countries don't feel as threatened just yet. But the fact of the matter is it's an emergency because we have to take action now because the delay in how warming happens, how long, its irreversible effects. Once we've set this warming in motion, we can't undo it. And because of the scariest thing, which is the climate tipping points, we're at risk of triggering whereby the warming we cause directly through our emissions triggers changes that produce more warming. And then you are looking at several, even 5-6 degrees Celsius of warming instead of 2 or 3 degrees Celsius of warming, which would just be, it would devastate the entire living community of the planet.
Excuse me, folks. Yeah, so we had someone call in that, A, wanted you to restate that email address.
Sure.
And then also restate the time of the event.
Yeah. It's 350kclead, LEAD, at gmail.com. For whatever reason, Google wouldn't let me just do 350kc at gmail.com. And the time of the event, so it's scheduled Washington Square Park, starting at 1 p.m. for the rally. 1 to 3 is the time of the event. There will be an art walk. We didn't mention the art walk yet. We've had some wonderful local artists create artwork for banners on the themes of the rally. So there will be an art walk there as well to participate in. We just have a whole plan to make this a great event. Hopefully the weather is going to cooperate. It will still be a great event, but we sure hope we can, after all the planning we put into it, we can actually do it at Washington Square Park.
And John, we hope people carpool and take the light rail in, because one of the things that some of these other marches can be challenging if you've not been to one yet is the parking situation. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure you get there early, you park in the city market, and you ride the light rail in. There's a lot of opportunities to kind of use those modes of transportation that are not just driving yourself to the march and for the environment when you're doing your polluting yourself. So we want to make sure and encourage that.
Yeah, if you go to Climate March Kansas City on Facebook, the information will be on there about how to use the streetcar or the metro, the Ride KC system to get there. Because parking, there's no dedicated parking at Washington Square Park, as anybody who went to the Women's March and to the March for Science knows. So if you can take at least that, if you can take at least that last leg of your trip to the rally by transit, that really will help. Although we will be providing information on where parking is available.
One spot would be that you could suggest parking in the Crown Center garage.
Right.
It's free on the weekends.
We've included information about parking. Yeah. It will be going out. And folks who send an email to that address I gave out, 350kclead at gmail, we'll also get you the information about parking. And then again, who knows, we may have to move it.
All right, we're about out of time. So I want to thank, we've been talking to John Kerman and Manny Ibaka. Talked about the People's March, which will actually be a rally at Washington Square Park this Saturday, April 29th, from 1 to 3 p.m. And coming up next, I'll turn it over to Mike Murphy. He will have the calendar for us, and he will tell you about a pre-recorded interview that he has from Joe Spies.
But first, Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. The official start of spring is March 20th,
But for many of us, it's the sight of a robin hunting for worms in the warming soil that says winter is finally over.
The robin's status as a familiar backyard bird helped it become a favorite harbinger of spring.
That's Stanley Temple, senior fellow at the Aldo Leopold Foundation in Wisconsin. Temple says that the timing of robin's migration is based almost entirely on temperature. So when spring thaws come early, so do the robins. In the 1930s and 40s, the naturalist Aldo Leopold, his students, and colleagues recorded when robins returned to south-central Wisconsin. Now, with winter temperatures higher than ever and spring thaws coming earlier, the Aldo Leopold Foundation has found...
As spring temperatures have risen, their average return has now advanced to almost 3 weeks. And with milder winters, some robins now never even leave.
As much as we look forward to hearing the red-breasted robin sing each spring, spotting an early bird is not a cause for celebration. Instead, it can be a reminder that the climate is changing.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
And now our calendar of events, courtesy of Natural E. Eco Elvis will be crooning at the City Market on Saturday to promote eco causes and a used school supply drive at Get Your Green On from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Scraps KC will be collecting used school supplies, and art teachers will be hosting make and take activities. The school supplies will be recycled and redistributed to economically challenged schools throughout the metro. Donated supplies can even include dried up markers, which will be recycled into watercolors and jump ropes. A complete list of acceptable used school supplies and other items can be found at scrapskc.org. And then Eco Elvis will and the Extraordinaires will be singing from noon to 1. They will also have beehive activities, rainwater and composting demonstrations, cultivating and harvesting and exchanging seeds with Seed Savers KC, the latest in electric cars, tips for environmentally friendly gardening, things about biochar, all that happening at the farmers market at 5th and Walnut on Saturday this morning. And then from 1 to 3, the Climate March. When the People's Climate Movement marches converges on D.C., local leaders will join citizens to rally for climate justice and jobs at the Climate March here in Kansas City at Washington Square Park from 1 to 3 this coming Saturday. And then the following day, Sunday, how does climate affect people outside the U.S.? And this will be a talk given at the Ecumenical Christian Ministries Center at or ECM Center at on campus at KU at 1204 Oriette Avenue in Lawrence, Kansas. Dr. Richard Randolph, a Lenexa, Kansas family physician who is chief medical officer for Heart to Heart International, will speak on how does climate change affect people outside the U.S. at this event in Lawrence. It begins at 3:30 on Sunday, April 30th, and is hosted by the Lawrence Ecology Teams, United in Sustainability, a.k.a. LETUS, and the Sierra Club Wakarusa Group. It's part of a series entitled Climate Change Consequences and the Possible Responses. Future speakers are planned to address how food production will be impacted by climate change and possible species extinctions. And that's about it for our calendar of events. It was Wednesday evening. It was April 19th. There was a town hall put on in Kansas Representatives Kevin Yoder's district. To my knowledge, Kevin Yoder did not show up, but there were an array of speakers speaking on topics. Someone from the ACLU was there, Dr. Sophia Khan speaking about refugees and immigration was there. But for the purposes of this program, we focused in on Joe Spees, who's been a guest on Eco Radio before and is an environmentalist, anti-fracking activist. He spoke on the climate. So we're going to get to hear that now, and we're going to just go out with that. So do stay tuned. The podcast will be up shortly. Please check out our Facebook page, Eco Radio KC, and like it and tell your friends about Eco Radio KC here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's great to be here. It's especially great to see so many of you. It's really encouraging to see your dedication to this effort. It's wonderful. Now, I've got a lot of information to go through. I'm the climate and energy person. And as you know, the climate and clean energy are under serious attack right now since the Trump election, and without getting any kind of reasonable support from Representative Yoder. So I've got a lot of stuff to go through. I want to give you a couple of quick news updates just related to climate. I don't know if you read about the Yukon River in Canada that was fed by glaciers. And because of climate change, those glaciers are disappearing. That river reversed course. It's the first time in history that a major river, as a direct result of climate change, has reversed course. A study came out this week, and it's the strongest alarm that we've heard from the scientists. The Great Barrier Reef is dying. This will have a major impact on our entire food chain ecosystem. Now, I want to give you some quick news updates on what's going on in the Trump administration. Just this week, Trump announced that he wants to kill the regulations restricting mercury emissions from coal plants. He wants to allow deadly mercury into the atmosphere. Then, just yesterday, EPA head Pruitt announced that they have issued a stay on the regulations President Obama put in place to restrict methane emissions. This is really dreadful news. Methane, as you know, is 80 times more powerful than carbon dioxide at trapping heat. And this is the worst thing that could happen to climate people right now. A couple of other things related to Energy Secretary Perry. He announced just this week they're going to do a study of the electric grid to prove that wind and solar is making the grid unreliable. I think you'll agree it's a little unusual to announce your conclusion before you've conducted the study. Then Friday, Secretary Pruitt is going to be headlining a conference in Dallas of the oil and gas industry to tout the safety of fracking and all of its great benefits. But other than that, there's no bias in this administration. Now, I want to talk about what Yoder can do to help things out a little bit if he has the courage and the information. And the more correct information we give him, the better off we'll all be. I have tried to contact Representative Yoder and his staff to get an answer of his stance on the Clean Power Plan that was introduced August 2015. The response that I get is that regulations like this will kill jobs, raise energy prices, increase costs, it'll have a special effect on low-income people, and it goes on and on and on. Well, he's wrong about every one of those things. The exact opposite is the truth. And I want to get into this right now to just talk about the Clean Power Plan and the things that are going on from it that could really help and that Trump and Yoder are trying to kill. I want you to look back just for a minute to when President Reagan was president, when he came into office. President Carter had installed solar panels on the White House roof. President Reagan came into office, ripped those solar panels off the roof, said, "Solar power is a goofy idea." Well, the Chinese took that goofy idea, turned it into a trillion-dollar industry that employs over 500,000 workers that should have been American jobs. Those should have been American jobs. And now, Trump and Yoder are going to do the same thing with the Clean Power Plan, since the argument that Yoder is making related to the effects of the Clean Power Plan or just the reverse of reality, I want to run through a few of these things. The coal industry is in decline for a number of reasons. There's cheap natural gas. Natural gas is down to $3 per million BTUs. And low wind power prices. If you look at the wind corridor, that's North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas, and especially in Kansas and Texas, the power purchase agreements for wind power now are less than 2 cents a kilowatt hour. It's the cheapest electricity of any kind in the United States. It is not going to increase prices for anybody, I guarantee you. Then you have the fact that solar power is becoming more affordable, and then energy storage project viability. This is what I do. I'll be talking more about it later, but I want to make sure you understand the importance of energy storage. We cannot make the complete transition away from fossil fuels to wind and solar power without affordable energy storage, and things like compressed air energy storage achieve just that. And I'll tell you more about that pricing here in just a minute. And then aging coal plants. The average age of our coal plants in this country is 40 years. I mean, they're at the point where they have to be stopped anyway. It was just announced today that American Electric Power, one of the largest utilities in the United States, took to court this case where they didn't want to have to pay the money needed to make that plant less polluting. And the court ruled against them. Just to make that plant less polluting is going to cost $1.2 billion. It doesn't make sense for any of these utilities to continue coal power when you have cheap, cheap, cheap renewable energy out there. It's nonsense. So Trump's promise to promote coal power is not in our best economic or environmental interest. I want to share some costs with you. There's a coal plant that's going to come into operation here very soon. It's the Kemper coal plant in Mississippi. This is a 500 megawatt alleged clean coal plant. It's not. It's cleaner, but it's still filthy dirty. That 500 megawatt coal plant is now at a cost over $7 billion. You can create, and then you have the cost of coal every year in addition to that, hundreds of millions of dollars of time to pay for the raw coal needed for that plant. You can take wind power in this wind corridor, combine it with the compressed air energy storage technology that I'm talking about. A 500 megawatt wind project costs about $700 million. You can combine it with my technology, this compressed energy storage, to turn that into base load power. Electricity is there when you need it, and it only adds another $300 million. So that's $1 billion total for base load wind power, compared to $7 billion for an unclean coal plant. See, the economics don't make sense. Trump and Yoder have to get the facts right. They're not telling the truth about the cost of renewable energy. Now, and then about the coal mining jobs. There are less than 75,000 coal mining jobs nationally right now, when there are over 500,000 jobs in wind and solar, and that's at this point in time, when they're only providing, wind and solar, only providing about 8% of our total electricity. So if you do the math, knowing that we can get to at least 80% power delivery by wind and solar power when it's combined with energy storage, that would mean 10 times that 500,000 jobs. So if we have a brain in our head, we're going to do the thing that will really create jobs in this country and make this transition to clean energy plus energy storage, and tell the Trumps and Yoders that they can take a hike. Now, I want to talk about fracking, because the natural gas industry likes to talk about how clean they are and all this stuff. It's complete nonsense. It's not clean. They like to say that when natural gas is combusted, that it produces 50% of the greenhouse gas emissions of a coal plant. And that's true, but that doesn't tell the story. There have been a number of universities that have conducted really lengthy studies, and the EPA has confirmed all of this, that the fugitive methane emissions and other gases and volatile organic compounds that are involved in the fracking operation make natural gas now far worse than coal power when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions. Last year, for the first time, natural gas produced more greenhouse gas emissions than the coal industry. It is not a solution, and it's not cheap. So I just want to make sure you understand that. Methane, again, 80 times more effective trapping heat than CO2. We're putting out about 36 billion tons of greenhouse gases a year. I calculated a visual to illustrate what that represents, since it's hard for people to imagine exactly what 36 billion tons of gas is. So it's invisible, you can't see it. And I did it this way. If you were to put Chevy Malibus bumper to bumper and line them up, 36 billion tons of Chevy Malibus would circle the Earth 72,000 times. And that's been going on for 60 years. So when you're talking to climate deniers who don't get 36 billion tons a year of greenhouse gas emissions, use that. It's a little bit easier for people to visualize Malibus dominating our heavens when they think of that. Now, I'm going to move through some other things quickly. Where am I at on time? Okay, I'm going to blast through this really quickly. Thousands of water wells around the country have been contaminated from fracking. That's water gone forever. It'll never be part of our hydrologic cycle again. Then the earthquakes that are caused by disposing fracking fluids into injection wells have caused over $2 billion in damages to people's homes in North Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas, and insurance doesn't cover that. So this is a multi-billion dollar subsidy for the oil and gas industry. Again, they tell you it's safe, it's not. And then the volume of water. Every year, 2 trillion gallons of fresh water is gone forever from our hydrologic cycle that's used in the fracking process. Once it's contaminated with the chemicals and the brine that's part of the produced water that flows back up, it can't be treated. It has to be disposed. That's what leads to the earthquakes. And the other part of it stays underground forever. 2 trillion gallons a year gone forever from our hydrologic cycle. That only makes climate change worse when you think about the droughts and everything that are exacerbated by that. And then the cost of climate change. Yoder and Trump, especially since he doesn't believe in it in the first place, and Yoder denies this, giant insurance companies like Munich Re and Swiss Re have been calculating the cost of climate change, the cost of things, droughts, wildfires, etc. Those costs amount to over $300 billion a year now. We cannot sustain that. That type of drain on the economy is not sustainable. Climate change is affecting things now, it's real, and it has to stop. And then the healthcare costs. The most credible study done on the healthcare costs of burning fossil fuels was done from the Harvard Medical School lead author, Dr. Paul Epstein. They spent years and years and years gathering information. Burning fossil fuels creates $500 billion a year in healthcare costs. As we get to clean energy, those costs begin to go away. And the threats to national security. I'm sure many of you already seen that the studies from the Pentagon now believe that climate change is probably the greatest threat to our national security. And then new revenue to farmers. If we care about our farmers and ranchers and our rural communities, as many of us have backgrounds there, developing wind power especially is going to be the greatest thing that ever happened. All this new revenue from wind projects completely revitalizes these rural communities and their families and their livelihoods. It's just a very good thing to do. And in conclusion, with the Clean Power Plan, reducing greenhouse gases will actually create more jobs, lower energy prices without threatening the reliable delivery of electricity. It will lower the costs of climate change, those hundreds of billions of annual costs, lower healthcare costs, increase national security, and bring new revenue to our farmers and rural communities. Let's help Trump and Yoder get the message straight on clean energy and the Clean Power Plan. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
During the beginning of the 20th century, yet another unique American music form developed.
when Mexican-American musicians from Texas began to play the accordions brought by immigrants from Germany and Czechoslovakia. The result was Tejano, or Tex-Mex music.